The Money Show.
The Africa Business Report.
The Africa Business Report brought to you by Nedbank Corporate and Investment Banking, partner with the bank that puts sustainability at its heart. See money differently. Nedbank. Chris Bishop, founding editor at Billionaire Tomorrow. You've been on your travels, Chris Bishop. Has this been your first trip out of South Africa in, I don't know, a squillion months?
Well, it is, actually. It's the first trip out for nearly a year, and it's my first trip for Billionaire Tomorrow. So I was a bit apprehensive, as you know. But really, as it turned out, I shouldn't have been. Are you still there, Bruce?
I'm still here. You're still there. This is good. No, okay. We're all on board.
Okay. So basically, I got there, and I was surprised at the other end. I was greeted by medical staff with this COVID thing. I was shown to little cubicles, and I was given a test. And they give you the results before you walk out the airport. So it took about half an hour, no problem. And on the way back, another COVID result. But it's quite interesting, actually, how they're tackling the disease. And when I interviewed the finance minister on Friday night, Kenneth Afori-Atta, he was telling me that when this thing broke out, the President Addo, he said to him, look, mate, we've got a $100 million problem here. Can you find me the money? So they went around the exchequer. They also got some money in from the IMF as well to help fight the disease. And they spent quite a lot of money on combating it, which is interesting. And everywhere you go, remember, there's restaurants, shops, everyone has to sanitize, be screened, masks everywhere. If you drop your mask for a minute, someone will be on your neck to make sure you put it back up again. So it's amazing. But so the finance minister, they're getting ready for elections on December the 7th. And it seems to me that he's going to continue on in the job. But quite interesting, he said COVID-19 knocked their growth rate for the first time in many, many years into negative growth. They were growing at about 6%, and it's taken a huge knock. Obviously, they lost a lot of exports. They do, you know, cocoa and everything from cocoa to gold. And it seems that they're predicting next year, with all that they've done, that it's going to turn around to plus 5%. Growth again in 2021 and go to about maybe 7% in 2022. So it's an incredible story, but a lot of this is entrepreneur-led as well. There's a lot to try to support the entrepreneurs of the economy, and they seem to be reaping some of the benefits.
So, I mean, that's the secret, isn't it? It is small businesses. It's allowing these businesses to grow and to flourish in a supportive environment. That's, I think, what Ghana is getting right.
And it's funny, actually, because we had a nice evening of young entrepreneurs there for Billionaire Tomorrow. It was our first event in Accra. And just talking to the guys, he's got a very mature, very switched-on bunch of young people who've all got businesses from gas to brands to IT, etc., all sitting around just having a great conversation. There's no talk about politics, hardly at all. It's all talking about how they can get together, how they can make money, how they can cooperate with each other. But one interesting thing, I mean, they all admit the government's done quite a lot for them, but they still want tax breaks, they still want more support from the government to try to make the businesses sustainable. And I did actually say, well, actually, you get a lot more than a lot of countries in Africa. And one of them said to me, well, Chris, like Oliver Twist, we always like to ask for more.
Now, of course, but that's the nature of the beast. And, I mean, I love the way they don't have to worry about the politics, because the politics is, I suppose, mature enough to not be bothering too much about the machinations of politics. I mean, here we obsess about politics to a point where it's deeply unhealthy, and such a point it actually becomes restrictive and constrictive to the point where actually people are frightened into inaction.
Well, exactly. And the one thing is, just a couple of weeks before the election, I mean, you think you'd see people out on the streets and but, I mean, apart from a few flags here and there and a couple of posters on the lamppost, you would hardly know. The TV, obviously, is covering quite a bit of it. But it's not like everybody's, you know, always on about it all the time, or there's virtually next to zero election conflict and violence and stuff. And everyone's saying, you know, it's hopefully going to be quite smooth.
Well, good news on that particular front. Talk to me about your chat with Nana Kwasi Obeng. He is the gas king, isn't he?
He's the man who would be the gas king of Ghana. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, this guy's a banker by trade. He also was involved in finance. He's a very sophisticated guy. But what happened one morning? He went out trying to find some gas canisters. I mean, LPG gas canisters are like gold. in Ghana, because a lot of people still rely on them for cooking and all that sort of stuff, and they're pretty scarce. So he went out one morning, he couldn't find them to love their money, and he thought, well, hang on a minute, if they're that scarce, they'll be worth something. So he starts with gas canister delivery business, and he does about 3,500 canisters a week now, just in Accra, and his ambition, what he's investing to, he's getting a lot of investment and finance together for next year, is to have a depot in every major city in Ghana. He wants to be known as the gas king of Ghana. But the thing that interested me was I was looking through his warehouse. I saw this little internet sign on the side, and I said, what the hell is that? He said, no. He said, these canisters, they send you an SMS to you, the user, and to us, the supplier, when they start running out. So you can get a new one in time. We can just replenish it. And well, that's cracker. Apparently, it's technology they come up with in Spain, and he's imported it, and now they're using it there. But certainly, again, you know, he's the one who came up with the Oliver Twist crack. But he says, overall, he says, we want more from the government. But as it is, we're trying to work as hard as we can and do as much as we can. And again, you know, he's just one of scores of entrepreneurs there doing exactly the same thing.
We know big watch brands out of Africa. I mean, we all know Rolex, and we know Omega, and we know Kevin Lings, the economist, makes watches at home under his Lings brand. But now we've got Caveman watches. Any good?
I know. Because when I actually picked up the story, I couldn't believe the name. But incredible. I mean, a guy called Anthony Zamefe. He's aged 31. He's from a place called Volta, which is a region outside of Ghana. He grew up in the country, but it's an incredible journey to watches. I mean, the guy used to work in a hotel in Accra, and he had a fairly bad career there. He said that at some stage he had a run-in with the management, and as a punishment, he was sent to the airport to be one of those guys, you know, the ones who hold up the signs for the hotels trying to get business. It was a very humiliating experience, and then he cottoned onto this idea of watches, and he spent 2 years selling watches on the streets and around the offices of Accra. And he's quite an educated guy, and he said it was so bad that he'd go and sell some watches, and some guy, you know, would be there. He'd say, hey, what are you doing? Why are you selling watches like this? You know, you should be doing more than this. But all along, he was learning about what people wanted so he could set up his own business. And he took quite seriously. I mean, he spent a couple of months as an apprentice for a shoemaker in one of the markets there, so he could learn how to work leather, so he could make his own straps. Then he started to go and get people to make the body of the watches, and now he's gone the full way. He's got a whole team making these watches now, and it's amazing. He's like a tailor. You go in there and you say what you want, and he'll get his laptop out, and he'll get his drawings out, and he'll draw what you want. You can put in what you like. You can make your own watch. And the interesting thing is they're actually selling, and they're not cheap. Some of them are $2,000 or $3,000 each. And the cheapest are about 80 to 100. But I mean, he's trying to go across Africa. But the thing about it is, he says a lot of his customers are government people, they're diplomats, and they go to support him because he's the only watchmaker in Ghana. They go to support him, and they take them with them on overseas trips. You know, like 10 watches, and say, there you are, there's a Ghanaian-made watch, Caveman watches. I mean, it's an incredible thing. And he's employed already about 12 people. He's looking to employ more. He's looking for more investment, obviously, to try and get it done. But they are, I mean, I looked at them myself, how they were made. They're beautiful watches. You know, they really look classy.
I like the payoff line, Caveman watches. Be remembered. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you why he came up with it, because it fucks me as well. What's Caveman? He says, no, Chris, he said, when I was coming up with the company, I watched a documentary about cavemen, and I saw how the artifacts they made 50,000 years ago have still survived to this day, and that's what I want with my watches. You know, it's incredible. If you go out and cry, you see these huge billboards with a picture of a guy sort of holding a woman sort of thing, and it says caveman watches. I mean, you wouldn't believe it unless you saw it, but I mean, yeah, he's a young guy. He's up there. He's very sharp. He's very hardworking, and he could have the first Pan-African watch brand. You don't know.
Fabulous story. Thank you, Chris Bishop, the founding editor at Billionaire Tomorrow.